Welcome to High Impact Growth, a podcast from Damagi about the role of technology in creating a world where everyone has access to the services they need to thrive. I'm Amy Vaccaro, Senior Director of Marketing at Damagi and your co-host, along with Jonathan Jackson, Damagi's CEO and co-founder. Today, we speak with Dr. Dixon Chibanda, CEO of Friendship Bench. If you've not heard of Friendship Bench, you're in for a treat. And if you have, today you will get a behind-the-scenes look at how this incredible program and intervention has achieved such incredible resonance and scale. Friendship Bench has developed a way to offer evidence-based, accessible, and scalable community-based psychological interventions to people in need. By training grandmothers across Zimbabwe to deliver therapy on park benches in their communities, Friendship Bench has served 100,000 people last year and expects to reach 200,000 this year. Today, the organization's CEO shares his keys to success and how he's working towards the goal of becoming completely digital. Trigger warning that we will be speaking about suicide today. Welcome to High Impact Growth. So I am so excited for today's conversation. We have Dr. Dixon Chibanda here, CEO of Friendship Bench, and I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Jackson, Damagi's CEO and co-founder. Welcome, Dr. Chibanda. Great to have you. You got a really, really powerful story, and I've been watching your TED Talks and really motivated and inspired by them. Would love to hear for the audience a bit about your background story and how you got into the work of a Friendship Bench.
There's never really a single starting point when it comes to developing something like the Friendship Bench. I think it's a process, you know, and the beginning of that process is considered to be, I guess, my childhood, the influence that I had from my grandmother. I always say that I grew up with very strong women around me. I think getting into psychiatry or mental health, you know, whichever way you want to look at it, was triggered by a series of events which started off with the loss or the death of a close friend who took his own life. And I think that was a turning point in terms of just understanding how people who may be seemingly looking like they are doing well, striving, happy, energetic, and the next minute they're not doing well and, you know, they take their own life, you know. So I was like an eye-opener for me. And when I came back to Zimbabwe, I think just deciding to work in psychiatry also led to its own new understanding of mental health, particularly the death of Erica, you know, one of my patients. Erica had been under my care for a while when she took her own life. That was really the turning point that made me realize that I need to do something. The journey had begun. I think the death of Erica was a point where I had to make a decision, and I kind of realized that I needed to move away from working in a hospital as a psychiatrist and find a way of working in the community, make my services a lot more accessible. And I think that's where the journey of Friendship Bench really starts.
And it has inspired so many people, the story that you shared in your TED Talk and what you're now doing with Friendship Bench. For our listeners who aren't as familiar with your specific model, could you share what that model is, how you have created this amazing ability for grandmothers and communities to support mental health, and what you're currently doing today in Zimbabwe and scaling up?
In very simple terms, a low-intensity psychological therapy or talk therapy that is provided by trained community grandmothers in Zimbabwe and beyond. In a nutshell, what we do is we equip these grandmothers with basic skill in cognitive behavioral therapy. We then allocate each grandmother a wooden bench in their community. We facilitate referrals to that wooden park bench through social media and through other existing organizations in the community. Police stations, school, and people go to the bench. The grandmothers screen everyone who comes to the bench using locally validated screening tools, which enable the grandmothers to establish whether someone is a case or not. By case, we mean, do they have enough symptoms to warrant receiving a structured therapy or do they just need reassurance? So nobody stand away from the bench. It's just that people receive different things depending on what your score is on the validated screening tool. And after anything from 4 to 6 sessions, people are then invited to join a support community. And in the support groups, they use the skills that they have learned from the bench with the grandmother. They use those skills to collectively problem solve around bigger issues. That's what we do, Friendship Bank. You know, we empower grandmothers to be the therapist.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that sounds so simple, but I'm also sure that it took so much to even get to that point. I'm curious to hear a little bit about like the journey to kind of figuring out a model that works and how the kind of scaling has been over the last handful of years.
Often when I talk about Friendship Bank, folks think it was smooth and I knew exactly what to do. Now, there's been a lot of mess with a lot of mistakes, and we continue to make a lot of mistakes. But one of the things that we do, which I always encourage my team to do, is if we're going to fail, let's fail fast and go back to the drawing board and focus on what needs to be improved. You know, so that's really our sort of approach to the work we do at Friendship Bench. Go in, try out things, and we use rigorous methods to evaluate what we do. We have over 100 peer-reviewed scientific publications about the work that we do, Friendship Bench. So that actually reflects the journey. You know, anyone who wants to understand where we're coming from and the mistakes we've made can read our publications. But in a nutshell, when we started the journey from the 14 grandmothers, I like to use the 14 grandmothers as the starting point of Friendship Bench, because with just 14 grandmothers in one community in Harare, everything that we did was predominantly manual data collection. And I remember running around trying to find a stationary bookstore where they had the cheapest notepads, the cheapest pens. Everything had to be the cheapest. And of course, that also compromised on quality sometimes. That was the beginning, really, the formative years of Friendship, really going out there, getting the material that the grandmothers needed in order for them to collect that data. And then bringing that data together, you know, trying to understand how best to put all of that in an Excel sheet, and then try to transfer that to another software package to analyze that. You're working with just 14 grandmothers, and you can manage, you know, to bring together all that data that is collected by the 14 grandmothers. But as the numbers increase, at the moment we are working with more than 2,000 across Zimbabwe alone. You know, it didn't take much to realize that the methods that we were using were not going to work. As we were scaling, or as we were seeing more and more people, you know, last year, Friendship Bench reached over 100,000 people, you know, talk to a grandmother. This year, we're expecting more than 200,000. You know, so that journey has really been marked by a lot of lessons which have prompted us to start thinking on how best to collect data, how best to support the grandmother, how best do we ensure fidelity at scale, you know, only moving toward using a lot of technological platforms to help with the data collection, help with the analysis, and help ensuring fidelity. You know, so we've come a long way, and we're hoping that by the end of 2024, we will be completely digital in the way we collect data, the way we analyze data, and the way we run most of the support that we provide to the grandmothers.
Yeah, and we're really excited to be partnering with you on that journey and trying to make sure ComCare can meet the needs of supporting those grandmothers and the M&E side. Going back to those 14 grandmothers, though, Dixon, I'm curious, when did you know this was going to work? We have these ideas and these nuggets. Maybe this intervention could solve this problem, but what was it in that first cohort of 14 grandmothers that you saw and you're like, this has something here. This is definitely the nugget of an intervention that I can scale.
The stories, because when I first started with the 14 grandmothers, you know, we would meet every week. Initially, we met twice a week. And it was really more like an opportunity for us to debrief, for me to hear from the grandmothers, the challenges that they were facing, people who were coming to the bench to get services. You know, and so learn about the different stories that were coming to the bank and the different issues people were facing. That was really the first sort of realization, you know, from the stories that, wow, this is powerful. If people can bring these kind of stories and feel comfortable to open up to these grandmothers and then walk away from the bench feeling a lot better, there must be something in this, you know, could probably be taken to scale, you know. Of course, my intention back then was never to take Friendship Bench to scale. I didn't think I had the capacity to do that. But I think once others got a lot more familiar with what I was doing and encouraged me to really start thinking about how best to expand it, that's when the idea really sort of emerged. And, you know, when we got that first big grant from Grand Challenges Canada, I think that was the beginning of going big, because for a long time, initially, while Friendship Bench was running, particularly with the 14 grandmothers, I supported the 14 grandmothers. I didn't see that as a burden. I felt it was my way of ensuring that, in my own small way, avoiding another incident like the one that I had with Erica, because people could now go directly to a grandmother in their community and talk about the issues that they were affecting them, and grandmother could be there to provide therapy, but also to provide guidance. But of course, as it became bigger, I needed to then start thinking of how to support the initiative as it, you know, grew from 14 grandmothers to 52 grandmothers, 140, and it just kept growing, 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 you know. Unfortunately, there were people out there who were watching.
That's wonderful. And we'll dig into how that scaling process has been, what role technology can play. I'm just curious, in that initial cohort of 14 or that next cohort of 50, when a grandmother hears about this concept, and you're talking to potential grandmothers who could play this role to provide this amazing support, how confident is a grandmother that this will work, that she can fulfill this role? I'm curious, when, you know, enroll these women who are providing this amazing service, does it resonate immediately? Does it take some time for you to explain, like, yes, this can work, yes, this is something that is going to help your community dramatically? Or did it just kind of click naturally? You know, was there a lot of belief that this made a lot of sense?
Yeah, I mean, the first 14 grandmothers, that was the most difficult, you know, because when I started interacting with the first 14, I was using a lot of frameworks developed in the Western world, conceptualize what we would do, try to understand what conditions we would be treating, and all of that. Hadn't realized, for instance, with the first 14 grandmothers until much later, storytelling can be healing in itself. I didn't know back then that you could actually embed elements of CBT within storytelling. I didn't understand the importance of using local indigenous idioms of distress to navigate through therapy. You know, all of those things were still new. So I think the greatest barrier was with the 14 grandmothers. After that, I think because all the new grandmothers that come to Friendship Bench are actually told about the importance of storytelling, which they immediately resonate with, the importance of using the wisdom that they hold as the elders in our communities, as the gatekeepers, you know, as the custodians of local wisdom, culture, and knowledge. And they all kind of resonate with that entry point. And so we hardly have problems recruiting PJOY and provide therapy, particularly elderly people. The problem that we face is we can't take everyone that wants to do this work. You know, I wish I would take everybody that comes forward to offer their services. And so we're in a good position at the moment when it comes to interest to do this work. And I think it's largely because the work that we do in a very different way, it's a very non-clinical way, the way it is framed. You know, we often talk about creating space for people to share their stories. You know, that is the first thing that we do at the Friendship Bench. You know, the fact that we don't focus on a diagnosis, you know, like we're not really interested if you're schizophrenic or if you're bipolar or you're suffering from major depression, you know, point is your story, because regardless of what condition you have a story. And that's what we leverage on the bench, that story and how to use that story to help you become a better person, to cope better with the challenges, the adversities that you might be facing as a human being. You know, one of the things that I have learned personally from the grandmothers is really the importance of being comfortable with being vulnerable. It's something that I didn't learn from medical school, from training as a psychiatrist, but it was from the grandmothers, you know, and that's so powerful. When we are comfortable with being vulnerable, we enable ourselves to be a vehicle for therapy, you know, and we are able to share our own personal stories as well.
So I think you've mentioned Erica a few times and how that was an impetus for making sure that there was access at the community level, coming up with this new model. And in your TED Talk, there's a very powerful explanation of why that was incredibly compelling. And this model is just so compelling when you hear it right now. I'm curious the initial reaction you got as you tried to collaborate with local health departments, with the government, with other experts in mental health. As this model came up, as you kind of validated that first set of 14 and tried to figure out how this could improve, what was the initial reaction to the model? And how did you build partnerships to keep scaling this up, as you mentioned?
The initial reaction naturally was, you know, filled with skepticism. This was something new. Here I was trying to do what doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists do with a bunch of grandmothers who have very little education. So there was quite a bit of skepticism, and I must be honest on that. Me having a little bit of skepticism myself about it, I wasn't sure it was going to work, you know, particularly when I first started interacting with the 14 grandmothers. The reason why I carried on or persisted was largely because I was trying to remove myself from the hospital because of the death of Erica. My presence at the hospital where I worked kept reminding me of Erica's death and having these flashbacks that I had about her, particularly when I was running on a Thursday morning. You know, I'd sit in this consultation room where I had sat on numerous occasions with Erica, and always gave me these flashbacks. I wanted to kind of remove myself. And so these 14 grandmothers was my way of running away, to be quite honest. You know, I wanted to distance myself from Erica's death because I hadn't really come to terms with it. And interestingly, I truly opened up about Erica's death was with the 14 grandmothers. And I think in itself, created a very strong bond.
Well, it sounds powerful and parallel to the intervention design itself in terms of the power of storytelling, the ability for it to heal. And, you know, as you scale interventions, there's often a lot of pressure from the donor community to scale quickly, to have this big vision for scale. You mentioned that wasn't necessarily what you set out to do initially. It was, you know, reach 2,000 or get to multiple countries. But Friendship Bench is on this amazing path right now. And as you mentioned, over 100 studies showing the efficacy and lots of support. What challenges have you hit?
One of the main challenges that we are facing currently, or we've been facing for a while, is how to exactly manage big data. You know, how do we ensure fidelity, and how do we effectively support the grandmothers or anyone for that matter who is delivering the Friendship Bench, wherever they may be. And to address those challenges, firstly, with big data, particularly with remote areas, you know, like rural parts of Zimbabwe where connectivity is not always guaranteed. This partnership with CompCare has really been a game changer, because we are now able to actually upload data from the remotest parts of Zimbabwe. As I speak right now, we are using Comcare, I think, with around 80% of the grandmothers, and we hope that by the end of the year, it will be 100%. What that has enabled us is actually be able to upload data when we need it. So the good thing, I think, with Comcare is that it can also work offline. You know, you don't have to have internet. And so the data can be uploaded when they get into Wi-Fi range, which is great for us. And it's user-friendly. You know, the pilots that we have run so far have been very encouraging. That was one of my worries, that the grandmothers might not be able to manage, you know, this whole idea of, you know, collecting data using a tablet or a smartphone. It's worked amazingly well. It's a sustainable model that we could use because it ends up being much cheaper for Friendship Bench and the government. Ultimately, the end game at Friendship Bench is to hand over Friendship Bench to the government, so it becomes program which is run through the government of Zimbabwe, you know, and we've made some interesting steps towards that. One of them is the integration in the national strategic plan for health. And I think that is a big win for Friendship Bench because we are now sort of officially endorsed by the government, and through the work that we're doing with World Health Organization as well, we are using these different government forms, provincial, at district, and at primary healthcare level, the visibility of Friendship Bench, because in line with our vision of having a Friendship Bench within walking distance, we see the, you know, the integration of Comcare as a vehicle towards reaching a lot more people. I think impact for us at Friendship Bench is a measurable variable. You cannot talk about impact if you cannot measure it. And this is where bringing in Comcare has been extremely helpful because we can now track. You know, we can say baseline, this is what we saw. At 6 weeks, this is what happens. And at 6 months and at 12 months, just looking at the data that is coming in through these different sites where we have it present.
Can you give us an example of how the grandmothers are using Comcare?
Well, one of the examples comes from a place called Gwanda, which is very remote. And so the grandmothers in Gwanda have these tablets, you know, where we have a Comcare. The grandmothers have been trained on how to use these devices. And what they do is when they see a client, they will actually enter the data about on that client baseline. And some of the information that we collect at baseline include, you know, the age, the presenting problem, you know, the gender, where the person lives, the problem that they presented with, and most importantly, what the baseline score is, whether it's with the SSQ, which is the measure that we use to establish caseness. By caseness, I'm referring to a person meeting criteria for a particular condition, whether it's anxiety, depression, or PTSD. And so all of that is entered. So the grandmothers are now able to enter that data on this device as opposed to writing it down in a book, because in the past we would write physically in a book to an Excel sheet, which is then shared with our SIE team. Now with Comcare, this information goes immediately to our SIE team. And they are able to then follow up after 6 weeks to see what has happened with this client. One of the examples is clearly around making the data collection simpler for the grandmothers. They don't have to spend a lot of time writing in a book, which sometimes get lost. And we don't have to worry about stationery. We don't have to worry about pens, and all those kind of things. And also we are able to see when that data is uploaded, whether there's a problem within specific areas where we are collecting data with CONCARE. You know, we might zero in on an area because they have a lot of red flags, and that can enable us to sort of figure out how best to intervene or what is happening in that area. You know, for instance, if you're, this is just an example, you know, you have, you know, we had floods in Zimbabwe, I think 2 years ago. And people who were affected by those floods had extremely high rates of common mental disorders. And now using CONCARE, we would be able to pick up that kind of data without our whole team going there to carry out a survey. You know, we can just look at the data as it comes in and learn from that data. And it will enable us to effectively and efficiently allocate resources in areas that need more of our intervention, you know. So yeah, so I think the CONCARE platform is a game changer.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chibanda. And I love hearing about your end game of handing over Friendship Bench to the government of Zimbabwe. I see so many organizations grappling with that challenge of how do you keep a program running over time. Can you share a bit about how you're approaching handing over Friendship Bench to the government?
So with regards to the end game of getting it embedded within the government of Zimbabwe, it's simply based on the understanding that sustainability ideally is delivered by a government. Yes, non-governmental organizations can also deliver to scale, but at Friendship Bench, we believe that the ultimate doer at scale is the government. And if we equip the government with the skills that they need to do Friendship Bench, and we empower the government at all the different levels, from primary, secondary, tertiary level, with doing Friendship Bench, then they will continue to do it. And part of our strategy towards achieving this has been to partner with the World Health Organization. So with WHO, because WHO, as you know, works closely with governments globally. And we have recently partnered with the World Health Organization through an initiative we call FRIENDS. And essentially, FRIENDS is about going deep for fidelity at scale within Friendship Bench. And what that essentially means is we have a presence in 10 provinces. And what we need to do is strengthen the work we're doing in those provinces. But we also need to strengthen the referral pathways, because the grandmothers are not going to have the skills or the capacity to manage everybody that comes to the Friendship Bench. We have people who come to the Friendship Bench who are extremely suicidal or who are psychotic or who need medication for that matter. And the grandmothers cannot manage any of those. And so with the World Health Organization, we are able to refer from the grandmothers to the next level, be it a mental health nurse or a doctor at the district level in the province. And that doctor then assesses their red flag and establishes what can be done. So now our focus is not just to strengthen Friendship Bench as we go deep, but to also strengthen the different referral pathways or points in the referral to ensure that when somebody comes to Friendship Bench, they get good quality services all the way up to the top if they end up being admitted, for instance, in a hospital. So that's one of the ways that we are really moving towards ensuring that Friendship Bench is embedded and is largely about ensuring that the referral pathways are strengthened and that there is buy-in for Friendship Bench all the way to the top. And for us to be able to do all of that, you know, what I've just shared, you need data. And that's where ComCare comes in. You have to be able to collect data consistently, and you have to use that data to inform you of what needs to happen next.
Dr. Gibanda, you've shared so many rich learnings and insights from your journey throughout this conversation. I'm curious, what advice do you have for other individuals or organizations who are looking to implement community-based interventions for mental health support?
All right. The advice I would give to other organizations or individuals that are looking to implement community-based interventions for mental health is build the evidence. That's number one. Number two, understand who is the doer at scale. Number three, be very clear with your story, because most folks that will look an initiative like Friendship Bench, first and foremost, interested in the story. What is the story behind the work that you do? You know, and at least this is what I have learned. You know, people get attracted to the story, and then they want to see the evidence, and then they also want to see what is your scale strategy. Who is the doer at scale? You know, and you know, the evidence, going back to the evidence, that is critical, because if you have, ideally, I think, you know, the gold standard would be, you know, evidence showing effectiveness of an intervention through a randomized controlled trial. You know, that's the gold standard. Nowadays, you have all sorts of other ways of showing that something works. You know, you have implementation hybrid trials, for instance. You know, you can also start off with a very simple before and after evaluation, you know, like a cohort study, you know, a prospective cohort study. The important thing is to build the evidence systematically. Always try to publish what you are doing. Let the world see that what you're doing is driven by rigorous research. It's evidence driven. And then my other point on understanding the doer at scale, that is a process which should be carried out right from the beginning by engaging critical stakeholders, understanding the gatekeepers who are likely to influence policy. How can you influence policy? You know, one of the strategies that I used with Friendship Bench to get attention was to focus on integrating Friendship Bench in existing so-called sexy public health programs, you know, like HIV. You know, if you can show that integrating Friendship Bench in HIV, you improve HIV outcomes, policymakers love you. If you can ensure that by integrating Friendship Bench in maternal and child health, you improve outcomes for mothers and babies, they love that. You know, if you can integrate Friendship Bench in non-communicable diseases such as diabetes and hypertension, and actually show that you improve outcomes, they all love it, you know. And so being strategic about it is important, because then they begin to see the need for the intervention going beyond mental health. So Friendship Bench is not just about mental health. Friendship Bench improves a diverse public health issues or programs. So that kind of important. And then the story, of course, the story. What is your story? You know, I guess at Friendship Bench, I am considered to be the chief storyteller. You know, I sell Friendship Bench. Everybody sells Friendship Bench, I guess. That's not a very nice way of putting it. But you have to sell your product. You know, you have to make your product interesting, you know. And so I'm constantly telling the Friendship Bench story. So when you combine all of those together and you also tell the story, and telling the story is not necessarily just, you know, peer-reviewed scientific publication. In telling the story, oftentimes is about non-scientific publications, you know, writing opinion editorials, presenting non-scientific platforms, you know, such as TED, for instance. You know, we've leveraged my TED talk extensively at Friendship Bench, and a lot of people who have ended up funding us, it was because they watched the TED talk, not so much because they looked at the publication. So, you know, this is how it works. They look at the TED talk. They think, well, this is a compelling story, but how much evidence does this have? They do their own research and say, oh, they've actually published quite a lot extensively about this issue, you know, and, how are they intending to scale? They're intending to scale through government. Where is the evidence? Oh, they have, you know, they have a national strategic plan where Friendship Bench is included. And then, you know, they sort of get in touch. Can we talk and try and see how we can help you, you know? So it's just really being very systematic and deliberate.
Love that. Thank you so much for that crystal clear advice. Do you have any last words for our audience?
What I'd like to say is that everyone, wherever you are, you are capable of contributing towards the well-being of your community. We all have this inherent ability to reach out and support one another. The main reason why people find it difficult to do so is because, to a large extent, human suffering, particularly psychological, emotional suffering, has been medicalized, you know, and when things are medicalized, people keep a distance because they are worried that they will make a mistake. They are worried that they are not the expert. The entry point really is ultimately about storytelling. Regardless of what a diagnosis a person has, they have a story. I think ultimately what we all can learn to do is create that space for people within our communities to tell their stories, to feel comfortable to tell their stories. When people are comfortable to share their stories, that's when healing actually begins.
Thank you to Dr. Chibanda for joining us today. There is so much rich insight in what we heard. Here are my takeaways. Dr. Chibanda summed it up really nicely at the end with a three-part formula for creating a scaled intervention that applies beyond mental health, really to any intervention. First, build the evidence. Try things and test them rigorously. Know that you'll have learnings and iterate along the way. Friendship Bench has amassed over 100 peer-reviewed scientific publications about their work. Second, understand who is the doer at scale. In Friendship Bench's case, and likely in many cases, it's the government. As Dr. Chibanda says, sustainability is best delivered by a government. Because of this, the Friendship Bench team has been thoughtful about engaging government stakeholders, as well as the World Health Organization, building in referral pathways all the way to the top of the health system, and considering how to integrate the Friendship Bench program into the bigger picture, making it about more than just mental health, but overall improved health outcomes. Third, be clear with your story. This is what attracts people. Then they want to see the evidence. As a founder or entrepreneur, you need to be ready to be constantly telling your story and do so in creative ways. It can be both in scientific publications, but also in non-scientific platforms as well. Dr. Chibanda shares how his TED Talk has attracted funders and been leveraged extensively by the organization. Beyond that three-part framework, I'm taking away the tremendous healing power of both storytelling and vulnerability. Dr. Chibanda took one of his hardest and darkest moments when he lost a patient to suicide and used that to guide him to take his career in an entirely new direction, moving him out of the hospital setting and into the community. This is particularly informative to me as I lost my own brother to suicide 7 years ago and continue to work to find ways to let that grief and tragedy guide me and my work. I also heard Dr. Chibanda's incredible resilience. You will always get skepticism on a new idea that goes against conventional norms, but he's an example of the power of pushing through. And lastly, Dr. Gibonda highlights the foundational role of digitization in enabling all of this great work. To scale a program for sustainability, you have to be able to collect the data and use that data to inform what needs to happen next. Dr. Gibonda is partnering with Damagi and using ComCare to go completely digital in how they collect and analyze data and support their incredible grandmothers to deliver high-impact therapy to people in need on park benches across Zimbabwe. That's our show. Please like, rate, review, subscribe, and share this episode if you found it useful. It really helps us grow our impact. And write to us at podcast@damagi.com with any ideas, comments, or feedback. This show is executive produced by myself. Danielle Sheldon is our producer. Sarah Strauss is our editor, and cover art is by Sudhanshu Khan.